I don't like the smell of this. Then again, I never did.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Plays. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 14, Drawing the Line. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
We have a couple of site business updates before we get into this episode. First, thank you to everyone who supported us on Patreon.
Yes, thank you. So many of you.
It's wonderful. Crazy. You can go to patreon.com/againwiththis to support us if you haven't yet. If you are so inclined, many levels of support you can choose. We are already like over a quarter of the way to our next goal. So thank you to everyone who is helping support the podcast and spurring us to make additional content for you, which when we reach our new goal will be up to 2 extra episodes a month. So keep it coming if you're interested. Also, Imgur, oh boy, the visual aids host. In our last two episodes, we were explaining why they had put us under, you know, sex police law and made it so that you had to log in with and prove you were 18 or say you were.
The sex police are coming for your gifts.
But then right after we recorded that, I went and checked and then it was fine. It went through. You didn't have to log in. And then I scheduled a couple of tweets to that effect to ignore everything I said on Imgur. But by the time it was Monday and the next episode dropped, someone was like, no, they're still behind that. So I don't know what the hell is going on. I have, as of the last check that I did, which was yesterday, Friday or Thursday, as you're before this episode drops, it was not age gated anymore. So I don't know what they're doing, but we're sorry. And you know,
yeah, just be 18. It's because I swear so much in the captions. Sorry.
I don't think so. I think it's just like actual visual content. But anyway, sorry that they're going through it. Let's get into this episode. Speaking of going through it, starting with our C plot, Rhonda's new roommate is a neat freak. Rhonda, as we know, has an extra room because Sandy is gone. So at the beginning of this plot line, she opens her apartment door to Ray Don Chong, as teased in the outro from the last episode. She is so beautiful. Really too
this
good for this show, actually.
So dumb, but her like, face is flawless. Like she commits to this extremely stupid one-off.
She does. So her name here is Carrie Fellows. Rhonda tells her what happened to Sandy and Forever and Tomorrow and everything. And Carrie gets off on the wrong foot kind of by laughing condescendingly and saying she doesn't follow soaps and imperiously handing Rhonda her umbrella. But Rhonda rolls with it politely. And it gets better when Carrie compliments her decor taste and smoothly pivots to complimenting her job when she guesses wrong that Rhonda might be an interior designer because she thinks it's so great that Rhonda gets paid to exercise and help people reach their potential. And she's prepared for any question that Rhonda may have for her in clip 2.
Here's my resume and letters of reference. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't have pets or a boyfriend. I love to cook and I have a steady job.
Oh, what do you do?
I'm an OP.
Oh, you mean like somebody delivers babies?
No, that's an OB, silly. I'm an OP, an organizational professional. I help arrange people's lives for them.
How cool.
I also own my own car. My parents live out of town, so there won't be any unannounced visits. And I believe toothpaste belongs on a brush and not in the sink.
The first thing I would like to organize is her title, because why wouldn't it be professional organizer?
PO.
Organizational.
Not a parole officer, silly. A professional organizer. Okay.
Right. So Rhonda's only question is how soon she can move in. She's apparently interviewed a parade of losers, but has a good feeling about Carrie, and it is mutual. But when we see them next, Rhonda's faintly annoyed to find that Carrie has alphabetized their kitchen while Rhonda was out. And when she comes back from work that night, she sees Carrie has covered the high traffic areas of the carpet with plastic runners, and Rhonda's own closet is almost empty. because Carrie took it upon herself to spray all of Rhonda's shoes with pine-scented deodorant and send all of Rhonda's clothes to a dry cleaner in Beverly Hills.
What?
Yeah.
Who has this much money? Like, you need a roommate, but you have enough money to send your roommate's shit to the dry cleaner? That's hundreds of dollars.
I didn't hear her say she was going to pay for it. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, true.
I mean, good point. It doesn't come up again. So, who?
How do you alphabetize a kitchen?
She put all of the like foods in alphabetical order.
All right. By generic, like,
no, by
item
like,
name
what it
or
is.
By brand name? Like, does Campbell's go in C or does Campbell's go in S?
Dave, no one cares.
Apparently, I care.
Dave cares. She put it in like the names of the food order.
Okay.
So like cumin would be next to, I don't know.
I knew cumin was going to be the selection. Knew it.
Did she do like the, wait, but did she do like the pots and pans? So like frying pan?
No. It's just the food.
Okay. All right. I'm satisfied.
I mean, the spices, okay.
Sure.
I also do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, ostensibly, it doesn't stay that way longer than 2 minutes.
See, but. I have little boxes, just little cheap plastic $1 boxes I bought once upon a time. And I generally organize the spices by cuisine. So I have like the cumin and the cayenne pepper are together, that kind of stuff.
And the
so
coriander, you have
Tex-Mexy
sure.
stuff. And the Italian stuff's in another one, Indian stuff.
Basil and oregano go together. Yeah, I get it.
Anyway, back to the clothes. Much more patiently than either Sarah or I would be, Rhonda gently suggests that Carrie consider relaxing a little bit, particularly with things that are Rhonda's. And Carrie claims she understands and that she knows when to stop. So then on a Sunday morning, Carrie comes into the kitchen in time for a big breakfast that Rhonda has made. Rhonda tells her she'll handle the cleanup too. Carrie just, again, needs to relax. But then Rhonda puts the hot scrambled egg pan down on the wooden cutting board and Carrie tensely comments on Rhonda using one of her pieces of copper cookware. To Rhonda's question, Carrie says she doesn't mind Rhonda using it because it's guaranteed to last a lifetime if you use it properly, meaning she better get up right now and soak it. And Rhonda sort of says her name in a mildly warning tone and Carrie backs down to let Rhonda serve her for like 10 seconds before trying to soak the pan again. And Rhonda orders her not to touch it. In slight fairness to Carrie, it's her pan. Like, if she wants you to soak it, just fucking soak it. This costs you nothing.
Yeah. Also, as the person who's usually on dish duty in whatever mm-hmm. household I'm in, there is something about like, you know what? If I could just run some cold water on the rice pan, then I can mm-hmm. enjoy the meal.
Right.
But if I can't, then I'm just going to be waiting to do that. So,
yeah. So Carrie breathlessly babbles her thanks for Rhonda's patience because she doesn't want to jeopardize their harmonious roommate relationship. And Rhonda brings the plates over the table and Carrie resumes staring helplessly at the pan. This was a little bit funny. I got a shot for the visual aids of like the pan in the foreground and Carrie behind like looking like a horror movie.
Like, yeah. Because she can just, it's those little brown bits of egg cooling mm-hmm. to room temperature and bonding with the surface.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm aware it's not normal, but I feel Carrie on this. I do.
Well, people feel very protective of their cookware. I get it. Like, I don't cook, so I don't care. But I, you know, if people are like, no, you need to do this, I'm like, okay, you know, I will do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rhonda doesn't because that night she has dozed off on the couch when Carrie appears and confronts her with the fucking pan. Like, she's asleep on the couch and Carrie wakes her up by like jabbing it in the face, basically. According to Carrie, Rhonda did a shitty job cleaning it because she didn't soak it like Carrie wanted to. And keeping her cool, even after Carrie aggressively waves the pan at her, Rhonda calmly says she thinks Carrie needs to find somewhere else to live. And Carrie will do that right after she cleans her pan. Again, I'm kind of team Carrie here a little bit.
Yeah, but same. But
it
also
doesn't matter.
Carrie needs to learn about herself that she should not mm-hmm. live with other people.
Yep. And presumably she did because this is her one and only appearance.
It's true.
Moving on to our B plot, Matt learns seeking justice isn't cheap. Matt goes to meet a brisk lawyer played by character actor extraordinaire Judith Hoag, future sister of Raina James on Nashville. and tells her about the discrimination suit that he wants to bring out against his old employer. And after a few obvious questions, she leans in to ask how far he's willing to go to get the result he wants, because his personal life will be under scrutiny and it's going to get ugly. She will take his case, though. And he warns her that he's broke, which is fine. She'll work on a contingency after a $5,000 retainer, which presumably, unlike Matt, she will, Matt from 90210, not this Matt, she will use properly and not get suspended over. So Matt has taken a job at a restaurant in the meantime. His female colleague is confident that with his good looks, he will clean up and tips, and is probably right once his face heals. Jake is his first customer and pretty sassy for someone who was unemployed for like the first third of the season, by the way.
Yeah, and put us through a number of stupid storylines about same, including at a coffee shop. So
yeah.
Shut it.
Mm-hmm.
Go fix your bike by the pool. Just kidding. Don't do that.
Matt is so desperate to scrape together the retainer that he's thinking about asking his parents for a loan, even though anything they would give him comes with strings. And to Jake's question, he says they know that he is gay, but by common agreement, they just don't talk about it. And sure enough, that's exactly what we see when Matt goes over to his parents for dinner. Sarah, do you want to talk a little bit about who the guy playing his dad?
yes. Just stepping over from the Beverly Hills 90210 funicular set, where he almost threw Dylan to his death, to warn him to back off of the whole Tony Marchette thing. It's that guy who played the gangster who almost threw Dylan off a funicular.
Yep.
I think this was before that.
Yes, this was, yes. This was first. So he's breezily assuring Matt that he is better off without the job at the center. But then Matt asks to borrow some money. His dad thinks it's just to tide him over before he gets another job. So both parents are shocked when Matt tells them how much he needs and has to explain about the lawsuit. And Mrs. Fielding is dismayed. Mr. Fielding is a dick in clip 3.
Can't say it surprises me, though.
Thanks a lot, Dad.
I've told you before, son, you have chosen a lifestyle that most...
Being gay is not a choice any more than you chose the color of your skin.
Whatever, whatever. I knew it was bound to lead to these kind of difficulties.
Yeah, well, I guess it's my problems, right, aren't they?
No, it's not your problem. We want to help you.
But a lawsuit for what?
Discrimination.
Discrimination? Have you thought this through, son? Have you? I mean, have you really considered what you'll be putting yourself through? That kind of attention, publicity? You know how the media loves to run wild with those things?
It's worth it.
Well, that is really easy to say. Here, now, in your own home, surrounded by people who love you. But out there, the world doesn't give a damn about you or your cause, Matt. You take a stand and sure as hell they'll shoot you down.
I will take that chance.
I can't.
Thanks for all your loving support.
Oh, Matt, don't leave. No.
Come on, Matt, sit down. Matt! Thanks for dinner. Will you just wait here a second? Matt!
You.
Oh. Matt, we're only thinking of you!
Oh, my God. Always with the guitar.
I know.
It's a discrimination anguish, but sexy. No. Yeah. Stop doing that.
It is funny how much the language around portraying gay people, like even their bigoted family members, has changed. Like now you never hear people say that they think it's a choice. At least on TV.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, apparently his parents did not cough up, because when we next see Matt, he is showing up in Judith Hoag's office with collateral, which is the pink slip for his car. And he then starts monologuing about not being in this for a huge settlement. He's doing it for the sake of the next gay person facing termination for their sexual orientation. And either Judith Hoag was already all fired up before he got there, or his speeching put her over, because she tells him to keep his car while they build his case. She will get the firm to go pro bono since he's proven he's a worthy guy. I don't know why they didn't do that in the first place, since he's a social worker. Like, what made you think he had deep pockets? Plus, the case could get a lot of attention due to anti-gay legislation in the works in Oregon and Colorado. And if he wins, he'll get his job back, plus damages. And Judith Hoag Esquire will make a name for herself as well. And he anxiously says he's not in it for the publicity, but it goes with the territory, she says. So I guess put a pin in this, because presumably it's going to come back up and prove his dad right. I don't know.
I don't remember.
We'll see.
We'll find out.
On to the A-plot. Keith's marriage is not as dead as he would have us believe. Shocker! We start out with Allison and Keith at the beach house. She's looking out at the ocean when Keith comes out to say she's making him nervous, and she apologizes for what? For not making him comfortable? He's the married guy. She knows he's what she wants. She's never been with a man as great as he is. I mean, she lists attributes. I will skip it. But this all seems complicated and messy to her. But Keith says his divorce won't have anything to do with her. Okay. Yeah. Whereupon she starts crying and then apologizes yet again. But she's emotional because she never thought she'd fall in love or that anyone would love her back. Okay. Back to her apartment the next day, where once again, Allison has to tell Billy that she is not dumping Keith after all. Clip 4.
He's leaving his wife.
I mean, we could just play this clip for like every clip in this section, because that's what it boils down to. Yeah. No, he's leaving his wife.
Yeah, this is a rare good moment for Billy because, you know, he's ridiculous, but he's not wrong about Keith. Yeah. And he lets her know and she gets defensive. It's very dumb. And again, as Sarah said, repetitive. And then under fake skies, Billy runs straight to the Mancinis to help them with some repair job, but really to tell them Allison's business. He thinks that Allison has a whole new side that Keith has freed. Jane, of course, sides with the wife. Michael thinks love can change people. Jane thinks Allison is a homewrecker. So then later, Allison and Jane run into each other at the mailboxes. And after some routine bitching about the heavy rain, things get salty in a hurry in clip 5.
I wouldn't think anything could dampen your spirits.
You heard the latest.
Yeah, Billy told me the good news. Congratulations, I guess.
You don't sound very sincere.
I'm sorry. What do you want me to say?
I'd just like my friends to be happy for me.
If you're happy, I'm happy.
But?
Come on, Allison, it's freezing out here.
No, come on, Jane, tell me what you really think.
I just can't help thinking that other people are involved too.
And you don't think I've considered that?
No, not enough.
God, Jane, you've taken my whole relationship with Keith so personally from the very beginning. You think you were the one losing a husband.
It's just the way you talk about this other woman. Like she's not a person, just an obstacle in your way.
Well, thank you for being such a nice and supportive friend.
I was just being honest. I thought that's what you wanted.
Look, Keith loves me. I'm sorry if the fact that he's leaving his wife makes you insecure about your own merit.
Please, Allison, if you understood the first thing about a marriage, you understand that what goes around comes around. If Keith can leave his wife, he'll leave you too.
Finally, the actual point that someone should be making.
Yes.
They'll do exactly. It for you. They'll do it to you. Everybody knows this by the time they're 19, that you choose to ignore it is a choice, but whatever. I'm on the record as being a major non-fan of the whole, like, you know, the other woman is at fault in this scenario, but it's like just... like, even if your motivation in chief is a selfish one to avoid getting hurt yourself, you should do that, because it's not gonna go how you want.
Yes. Also, I feel like this is prefiguring the, you know, Jane's own storyline to come as well, but all of that is not clear yet. Anyway, Allison stomps inside and manages not to yell at Billy since she's on her way back out anyway. But Keith calls just then, and Allison is excited to get back there and listen to the rain on the surf, but they're going to have to take a rain check. Haha, that's my joke, not the show's, in clip 6.
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it tonight. Something's come up.
Like what? Work stuff?
How about if I try to call you later? Tomorrow? I gotta go.
Sexily. This sort of just occurred to me, but do you notice that the styling of this wife and Peter's wife on Beverly Hills 90210 are kind of the same? That dark bob and kind of like New York-y. I mean, we don't interact nearly as much with Mrs. Keith, but...
Right.
It just was like, so this is how you make a This is how you make a woman like cheat on a bull in the eyes of the audience.
Brown hair.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I didn't make that connection, but you're right. And what you, of course, listener, can't see, but we can, is that while Keith is on the phone with Allison, a woman, his wife, is bustling around behind him packing. So, And after a commercial, Allison once again has to eat shit from Billy regarding Keith's flakiness. She claims to believe he probably just had to work late, but she's staring at the window at rain falling in the pool, so I don't quite believe she actually thinks so. And then Keith is there himself, and Allison is letting him in despite her lazy hair bun and oversized Henley. Keith admits as soon as he's inside that he canceled because his wife showed up, and guess what? She doesn't believe that their marriage is dead at all. Clip 7.
I tried to explain to her. I told her that my mind was made up, that what we had was over, and that there was nothing she could do or say that would change that.
She didn't believe you?
No, she didn't listen to a word I had to say. She just kept repeating that it couldn't end this way, that she deserved another chance, that we deserved it. And she finally just broke into pieces and kicked me out of my own house. Oh. She's going back to San Diego tomorrow night. She's probably going to burn everything I own.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
Well, under the circumstances, I couldn't insist on staying. Not that I wanted to.
Oh, no, stay here.
Hey, Billy.
Hey.
Right before this, Allison asks Keith, what did she want? Like,
yeah.
Come on, writers. Like, think once about what you're like, what's she doing here? It is his wife.
Yeah, but I mean, Keith has represented the state of their marriage to her as like, we live separate lives and she doesn't care. And like, this has obviously been a total lie the whole time because, you know, he's like, I want to get a divorce. And she's like, wait, what?
Anyway. Right. But I mean, there's a way to then direct Courtney Thorne Smith to read it as, what did she want versus what did she want? Like, well, she wasn't selling fucking band candy. Let's think this through for 2 seconds. Anyway, sorry.
Yes. And again, at the end of that clip, that was Billy once again just reading Keith as the trifler that he is. Like, Billy's
lurking,
terrible.
Not alone with cereal and being judgy. I don't hate it.
Yep. So ignoring Keith's concerns about Billy's attitude, Allison assures Keith not only that he can absolutely stay there that night, but that Billy will lend him some dry clothes, which seems like a bridge too far. But when Keith has left the room, Billy tries to forbid Allison from letting Keith stay over, not on moral grounds, but out of fear that Lily will like show up with a shotgun and kill them all. And Allison's like, it's only temporary. And then we fucking see her picking up all of Keith's clothes from the floor where he dropped them. Like, I know they're wet, but surely she had a visible laundry hamper somewhere. Like, this is a real married ass man move, by the way. He somehow managed to remove his wallet from his pants before he dropped them. And while we can hear that he's in the shower, Allison picks it up and opens it to find a photo of Lily and Keith in lays and quickly drops it when she hears Keith turn the water off. And as soon as she sees him all wet, all she wants to do is fuck him again. So that's that. Until she wakes up in the middle of the night to find Lily in her lay sitting on the edge of the bed. Lily has to tell Allison a dream. It's a dream. But even in a dream, Lily is salty in clip 8.
He told me our marriage was over. News to me. I've been in Washington for the past 2 months trying to get Congress to bail out the farmers. We got the aid, but I lost my husband. So what do you do anyway?
Advertising.
Nice, creative field. You probably have one of those vivacious personalities. And a great sense of humor. I never really could get Keith to laugh. I hear you do that and a whole lot more.
You're being much too hard on yourself, Lily. According to Keith, the marriage was dead. These things happen.
Relationships go through cycles, Allison. Peaks and valleys. Things may not have been going well, but I never had a fighting chance.
But people change, Lily. You both got married so young, you and Keith just grew apart.
I know my husband, Allison. And I know myself. My marriage died because you came along and destroyed it. You're responsible, Allison. You and you alone.
squeak, squeak, squeak. This is sort of what I mean. Like, I know this is Allison's guilty conscience talking,
of course.
It's like, that was Keith and Keith alone. And little Keith. Sorry.
Yeah, he told her a bunch of shit. And, you know, it partly on her that she believed it. That was dumb, but, you know, she had no reason to disbelieve it, I guess. Whatever.
Yeah, he must be a wizard. That's all I can say.
Well, she's already said that he is.
Yeah. I mean, but what does she know?
Well, she never had an orgasm before she met him.
Really,
so there's
terrible
that
remark about her sexual partners, and I'm going to save it because it's not okay.
And of course, through all this, Keith's sleep is utterly untroubled because of course it is.
Yeah.
And the next morning, Billy apparently beats them to the kitchen just so he can shade them for fucking too loud. Keith suggests that he and Allison go camping, and she is all about it. Though after Keith leaves, Billy accuses Allison of not actually being able to rough it. But he also claims he's happy for her all of a sudden, so she feels free to tell him about her dream and how she feels guilty. And she thinks she needs to see Lily in person. So why she assumes Lily is still at the donor house, I don't know, but she is. And she catches Allison spying on her when she comes out to get the paper. Like, Allison just parked in her car, you know, a few doors down, like she's on a stakeout. And Lily curiously comes walking toward Allison's car, whereupon Allison flips a bitch and peels out. And it's kind of hilarious. I made a gif of it because Lily's like, what the fuck?
I mean, it's like total inept, like relationship spying that was rather relatable.
So it's awkward again when Allison and Jane run into each other in the laundry room. Allison tries to make conversation about the sleeping bag that she's washing, and Jane coldly tells her to have a good time camping. And stupidly, Allison asks Jane what her problem is, as though that isn't very obvious and she didn't just state it in their last interaction, but which Jane spells out when invited to. Allison then tells her to mind her own business, basically like, bitch, you asked, but Jane backed.
Yeah, there are any number of ways to not hear things you don't want to in all of these interactions with Jane, and you're not taking any of them.
Nope. But Jane backs down and says she cares about Allison and sees danger in her future, and Allison admits she wouldn't have chosen this situation for herself, to which Jane says she should have bailed as soon as she heard that Keith was married, except they had already fucked before that happened, and then Allison further invites Jane's advice and gets it in clip 9.
Long-term relationships are complicated, Allison. When you're our age, the biggest temptation is anything new. I learned that myself. See, the toughest thing in a marriage is keeping the commitment. And I guess I believe, maybe simplistically, that if you can kind of outlast together all the outer temptations and life changes that swirl around you, eventually your marriage will achieve a kind of transcendence that will far outweigh the brief excitement of a fling.
Keith is not a fling, Jane.
I'm not saying he is, but it doesn't sound like he's able to honor a commitment either.
So, in your perfect world, there is no divorce, and people should stay in unhappy marriages until they wither up and die, or find the meaning of love.
No, but I don't think anyone can go from one serious relationship to another without repercussions somewhere. Allison, I'm just worried about you. I'm worried that you're going to get hurt.
Well, you have a really interesting way of showing it.
I'm sorry. I guess my feelings about this whole thing have gotten in the way of what's really important.
What's that?
Our friendship.
Oh, God. All that stuff about transcendence is really going to make Jane look like an asshole in a few episodes. But anyway.
Yeah. When it turns out that she's married to a transcendent heel. But
yes. Sure. But the other thing is, like, when Allison's like, Keith is not a fling. Like, yeah, the answer to that is Keith may not be a fling to you, but that doesn't mean that you're not a fling to him. That's
or
the
that
point.
He won't have flings on you.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, on their camping trip, Keith talks about how exciting and intimidating it is to have so many options open to them now. But the first thing they have to do is move her out of the complex, or, failing that, bounce Billy. I mean, I don't not agree, but Keith means that Allison should move in.
Not for the same reasons, maybe?
Exactly. But Keith means that Allison should move in with him once he's fully divorced. And Allison says it sometimes feels like she's going to be around forever. And Keith claims he's trying to keep Allison separate from that, meaning Lily. She asks how Keith and Lily met. And of course, they started dating in high school. So at some point, he started taking shit for granted, which is not how he puts it, of course. Clipped in.
Sounds too good to be true.
Maybe it was. Felt like I was living my life in a vacuum, just wanting to get out for some air. All that stability can be deadening. So when I met you, I felt like I found what I really needed to be happy.
What exactly is it that you found? Confusion? Excitement?
Depravity.
Okay, Marquita.
What exactly are you guys doing?
Yeah, but also, I mean, so he didn't think his marriage was dead until he met another woman who wanted to get on his dick. Like, it's interesting how that timing worked out.
Yeah.
Lucky for you.
Also, you know, if you want to sell this upstairs, you need to make it out that, like, don't make it about the sex, or
right.
She's going to be like, eh.
Yep. So he adds that he hasn't told his parents about his imminent divorce yet, since they have a perfect marriage of 40 years and counting. And she comments that it's nice he has these role models. So he asks what her parents are like, and she kind of dodges, but makes it sound like they're not terribly happy, which we already know, and that Allison's own problems never stemmed from too much stability. Like, honestly, this fucking guy has no follow-up questions to that either. Like, well, nice to know what you're interested in with this woman you, quote, love, unquote. But she declines talking further about her parents and such, and doesn't seem very excited about a midnight hike either, perhaps because she doesn't want to die. Who takes a midnight hike? Whatever.
Yeah. So, like, is it going to be a naked hike? Because that also does not sound fun.
No. So the next morning, she climbs out of the tent just as Keith is running up with fresh-caught trout for breakfast. Ugh, camping. And She tells Keith she's not feeling well, but offers no other specifics, as she says she thinks she should go home. And he tries to see if her face feels feverish, and apparently doesn't notice how much she's flinching away from him as she repeats that she wants to go. And so when Allison comes home, Billy is writing something on a legal pad, though at some point he also took a break to doodle a soccer ball. You can see this in the visual aids.
Oh my God, I didn't even notice that. Amazing.
It's very Billy.
Doodle something.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
Yeah, if it was a woman, it would be a big, beautiful eye with really long eyelashes, but it's Andrew Shue, so it's a soccer ball. Allison hasn't even sat down before she starts whining about her situation with Keith and how unhorny she now is for him. His read is that Allison was just falling in love with the idea of falling in love. She doesn't appreciate this analysis, and then tells Billy that when they were talking about their earlier lives the night before, she couldn't tell Keith about her past. And it wasn't until she was a tween that she realized the distance between her parents was due to the fact that her dad had affairs that her mother pretended to ignore. And her dad would, like, disappear for months and then come back and fight with her mother, and Allison would have to pretend she didn't know also. Why couldn't she tell any of this to Keith? Well, clip 11.
I remembered how obsessed I was with my father's girlfriends. These women I imagined to be so beautiful and so lucky because they got all of my father's affection and all of his attention. And I hated them. And I envied them, and sometimes I wanted to be one of them.
This was also like, you know, knowing what we know comes later. This is sort of like movingly weird.
Yeah. But I also think, like, it, you know, they keep layering on this backstory for her, like when, it, you know, she was worried about she was remembering her mother's mastectomy. And that was one thing that made her family unhappy. And, like, it's not obviously, you know, unreasonable that both of these things wouldn't happen in the same family. But if this is what's in her backstory, it's weird to me that it didn't come out before now. Like, it wouldn't be enough that she just believed Keith that, like, oh, they really were, like, just roommates in a house. Like, everything he said was true, and she took it at face value, even if that all were true, that she wouldn't think beforehand, before this moment in the show, oh, I'm repeating this pattern. You know, like, this is episode 3 with Keith.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe she just doesn't want to see that she's repeating that pattern, but...
I guess.
It's either it wasn't thought through, or it's, like, extraordinarily nuanced. I suspect that it's not the second thing, but she acts it in a way that I also think is maybe... like, not smart exactly, because I don't know how much she knew about what was coming for this character and the father, but she sort of plays it like straight and doesn't put anything else on it. So it's like sort of open for the future. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I agree. Anyway, after Allison saw Grease, she pictured all of her dad's girlfriends looking like Olivia Newton-John. But now when she thinks about it, she pictures herself. Dun, dun, dun. So... she goes back to the donor house to talk to Keith, but wisely declines to have the conversation inside, where she might accidentally find that all her clothes had fallen off.
Yeah.
She announces that she can't see him anymore, even though she still loves him. He replies that he loves her too, adding rather petulantly that he's leaving his wife, so what else does she want from him? And this is, of course, her cue to leave, but instead she says she needs to feel good about her choices, and she can't if she's with him. And then he gets real turdy from here in clip 12.
I never should have told you I'm leaving Lily.
Oh, great. Then I would have been your mistress on the sly instead of a homewrecker.
And I wouldn't be such a threat. Now it's serious, Allison, isn't it? Now I'm no longer safe, and that scares the hell out of you.
No. Being without you scares the hell out of me. Being with you scares me more.
Well, you think you're doing this for Lily? Well, don't kid yourself. She's gone down to San Diego. If you and I break up, I'm not going back to her.
That's your business. Doing this is mine. Now. Well, I still can. Goodbye, Keith.
I love that his angle is like, like, basically trying to threaten her, or, like, you know, goad her into staying with him, like, with peer pressure. It's very strange choice.
And he is making some real... toxic masculinity faces during this conversation. Like, dude,
he is. And then at this point, as she's walking away, he comes after her, and because it's a Darren Star show and he's a man and she's a woman, he grabs her arm and does it hard enough to make her wince, which I made a gif of,
and she's like rubbing it when she walks away. Like, that's absolutely not okay.
Mm-mm.
Brandon. And
exactly. The conversation continues in our final clip.
What is this, some kind of game to you? This is my life you're talking about.
Right. Your life. My life. What I feel doesn't matter, does it?
You are so incredibly selfish. Let me tell you something. If you can't make it work with me, you're not going to be able to make it work with anybody.
Maybe so. At least I'll be able to live with myself.
Sexily.
Well, at least it's over. So she comes home demoralized and looking for comforting hot chocolate. Billy is sorry. She knows she has no credibility anymore, but cries badly as she says it's really over, and Billy hugs her. And honestly, it fucking better be over. This was all ridiculous, but I'm pretty sure that's the end. So
it's true.
Yay. Let us close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Michael is a tile guy? I mean...
yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all I got.
I'm going to give it to Judith Hogue Esquire, because she stepped up. She's going to make things happen for Matt. I'm confident in her. She's on the right side of history, unlike Matt's dad / Dylan's mafioso buddy. Least valuable player. Keith.
Yeah, Keith.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Not you, Allison.
Yeah, seriously. Stop fucking that guy, Allison. Next time on Again With This Beverly Hills 90210 edition, Matt wants to move, David and Donna want each other, but value their friendship more than romance, LOL. And since it took me literally 90 seconds even to remember Ellen's name, I'm not dignifying that so-called plot with a teaser. We shouldn't dignify any of these people with our visual aids, but we do. And you can find them on our website, that's againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And as we mentioned at the top, you can support our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. Thanks, friends. Hey, it's that recycled mobster, Sarah D. Bunting, and she's on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Copper Pan of Contention, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, for a $5,000 retainer, is David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.